So was anyone aware that this past week, Thursday, was National Puppy Day? Did you really? I'm not surprised, Pam. That's fascinating. So last Thursday was National Puppy Day. So to honor that, we went out and we bought a puppy. No, I totally made that up. Totally made that up. For those of you who know, we have a dog and the dog hates me, you know? And so why would we go and buy a puppy except for the fact that maybe we could find a dog that would actually like me. And so, you know, they have this phrase, this saying, perhaps you've heard of it, you know, a dog is man's best friend. And let's say hypothetically that's true. Okay, so we'll hypothetically say that our dog, who is a little Pomeranian, is my best friend. That doesn't necessarily automatically mean that it goes the other way. So I may not be our dog's best friend, despite the fact. So because the dog doesn't like me, you know, we tried to do some things to improve that relationship. And so what I did is I gave him a bath on Saturday. That'll help, right? You know, he looks so depressed afterwards. You know, he just cowers and he's got this sad face. He hates me. We're growing. I'll give you that. We're growing. You know, but what's interesting, so it made me think along this lines of when we look at friendship, you know, dog being man's best friend, sometimes we look at the relationships that we have in and around us, and those relationships, those friendships can be strained at times. And so perhaps you have some friends in those relationships. Those friendships are maybe not what they used to be. Maybe they're not what you'd like them to be. But I have some advice, because there comes a point sometimes when we have to look at our friendships and say, okay, maybe it's time for some new friends. Okay, and so I have some advice here to offer to those who maybe are at that point where you're looking for a new friend, or perhaps you're not sure if this is the time where you should be looking for a new friend. Well, here's some advice. So how to tell that you might need some new friends. First of all, they start leaving you passive-aggressive notes, all right? So for instance, you get this note, your friends are saying, stop eating my soup, I know who you are, I'm watching you, I mixed a little oxy powder in my soup today, care to find out what that is, take a bite. So perhaps you thought your friendship was on a level that maybe it just didn't exist, and you're finding these passive-aggressive notes. Perhaps your friends constantly give you the evil eye. That might be a sign you may want to pursue new friendships. When you let your friends use your stuff and it always comes back accidentally broken, maybe it's time to find some new friends. When their practical jokes seem to go a little bit farther with you than with anyone else, you may want to consider, I mean, can you imagine? That's a lot of aluminum foil. And aluminum foil isn't as cheap as it used to be. You know, that, I mean, that's going pretty extreme. If you always seem to take the back seat, maybe you need to find some new friends. You always get picked last for gym class, you know. You're the only one who doesn't receive the participation award. That would be kind of a downer, wouldn't it? Sorry. Whatever. All right, if you always get blamed for the bad weather, seriously, that tornado was all your fault. Okay, you're the reason why my house is destroyed. It somehow is your fault. If you're getting blamed for the bad weather, you might want to just find some new friends. And finally, if your pet has even unfriended you, then maybe you need to find some new friends. It's interesting, though, when we look at friendships, you know, we can look at real friends. A friend is someone who will help you move. You know what I'm saying? So you're looking at moving to a new home. You call them up. You say, I'm looking for some help to move. A friend will be there. A real friend will help you move more than once. You know, have you ever thought of the fact that, you know, fake friends, you know, the friend people that just kind of your superficial friends, maybe the better way to put it, they'll come over to your house and they'll never ask you for food. You know, you have to offer it. But your real friends are the reason that you have no food. Okay. And then, it, you know, the kind of one, I didn't put it up here, but one other aspect, if you're looking at investing in a new friendship, I would encourage you to consider investing in the friendship of a baby. Because just, I mean, think of this. If you can befriend a baby at this age, I mean, that like guarantees free cake once a year for like life. You know, you'll always get invited to their birthday parties and you'll always have free cake. So we're taking a little bit of a detour this morning. We've been going through the Gospel of John and we're just about ready to step into John chapter 4. But what we're going to do is we're going to just shift gears. We're going to go around where we were originally heading. We're heading to the same spot, but this is very important because what we're going to find here this morning is we're going to find this picture that Jesus lays out for people. It's a story that he's going to tell. And it's not necessarily dealing about friendship, but it is dealing with relationships. And what I want you guys to see, by the time we come to this conclusion, come to this end, I want you to see that this story that Jesus is going to share, it's our story. You got to be able to step into it, because this is not just some token story that Jesus is sharing, but this is a story that it's our story. If we're going to be generally just open and honest with ourselves in this, we're going to see ourselves in this like, wow, this, I own this. This is for me. And so what we're going to do is we're going to get into the Gospel of Luke for just this week, and then it's going to so relate so closely to what we have to go next week into John chapter 4 again. But here's where we start. We look at Luke chapter 10. We see in verse 25. We're going to be looking at verses 25 through 37. If you have a Bible, I would encourage you to turn there. I'm going to have some of the scriptures up here on the screen. Some will not be. If you would like a Bible, just slip your hand up, and Mike is back there, Steve is back there, and they'll just bring a Bible to you. So that won't be a problem either. So what we have here, on this one occasion in the Gospel of Luke, it says this: on one occasion, an expert in the law. Now remember, a few weeks ago, we talked about Nicodemus. Nicodemus was also an expert in the law. Nicodemus was what was known as a Pharisee, part of this elite 70 people of the Sanhedrin. This doesn't say about these elite, but this is an expert in the law. He knew the Hebrew scriptures inside and out, and he knew them extremely well. And so this expert in the law comes to Jesus, which was not apparently uncommon. A lot of these experts would come to Jesus for several reasons. One, like Nicodemus, perhaps they wanted to have that conversation. They wanted to learn a little bit more about his teaching. That could be the case here. But also, the reality is a lot of these experts in the law were so stuck on their law, they wanted to find ways that they could trip Jesus up, if you will. So they could catch him, they could trick him, and basically kind of pit society against him and show him, no, he's wrong, you got to follow us. And a lot of that was this jockeying for position between these experts against Jesus Christ. And so here's what we have. We have this expert in the law. He stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? It seems like a fair question. We actually see that question posed several times throughout the scripture. Once was that rich young ruler. We've talked about him in the past, where he goes to Jesus. He's not an expert in the law, but he says, what do I have to do? Jesus has a wonderful encounter with him as well. And here's the answer. Jesus replies, because he knows that he's an expert in the law, and so he challenges him along those ways. He says, okay, tell me what's written in the law. In other words, how do you read it? How do you understand? You understand all of that's written there. You've memorized it all. But how do you grasp it? Put it into your head. How do you articulate it? What is it? I don't want to say what does it mean to you, but really, how do you own what the scriptures say? And so the man has an answer. He knows the law. He knows it extremely well. So he answers him, and he says, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And so to show that this is part of the law, we see it in Deuteronomy. He's quoting two passages of scripture. This is all Old Testament. This is way back in Moses' time. All right, Moses, remember, he's the one that led the people out of Egypt. So Moses then receives this word from God, and he writes down all of this stuff. He's credited with writing Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And so what we have here is this expert in the law who knows this stuff inside and out, and he quotes it. All right, what do you have to do to inherit eternal life? He says, well, what does the law say? Well, let me tell you. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. That's where he finds it. It's in Deuteronomy that he's quoting. He also quotes then a passage in Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 18. And he doesn't include this part, do not seek. However, the part is in here, and I left it in there because I want you to grasp this, because I think what we see here in verse 18 is pretty key on what this expert's attitude was as we get into the story farther today. So let's look at that. Try to keep it in your mind. I know that can be a little bit challenging sometimes as we look at so many scriptures. But this is what the man is basically quoting from. And he says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people. But, here it was, love your neighbor as yourself. I want you to emphasize and focus particularly on the fact that it says among your people. Because that is the part that this man, this expert, is going to take issue with Jesus here in a little bit. It's just absolutely fascinating. So then we go on, and it says in Luke 10, Jesus says, well, good job. Good answer. You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live. You know, this is just a fine conversation. This expert probably is feeling really good about himself at this point. But, and this is where there's something, and it goes back to what we just saw there in Leviticus, there's something going on here in this expert's mind that he is uneasy with. He can't just take that answer and let it ride, let it slide, because he knows that deep down there's an issue. Jesus is going to bring that issue up in this man. So this is the man's response, and he says he wanted to justify himself, and so he asked the question, who is my neighbor? You know, when he knew the law, and he quoted the law, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love the neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, yep, you're right. Do that, and you're going to be fine. But then he's got to add in that justification piece. Okay, who's my neighbor? Because remember that Leviticus passage says, it referred to among your people. And I'm pretty convinced that that's exactly what this expert is trying to focus in on, that idea of among your people. And he's kind of missing the bigger picture, and Jesus is going to call him on it. So, what we find is in this gospel, I think I got a blank slide here, good. In this gospel, in Luke chapter 10, Jesus is about to enter into this story. And we oftentimes refer it to as a parable. It's called the parable of the Good Samaritan. What's interesting is some commentators, they believe that this wasn't really a parable, that they believe that this actually very well could have been a real story. You know how Jesus, a few weeks back, we talked about how Jesus encountered Nathanael and Philip, and he was able to recall all of these details. He knew where they were at the time. There's some commentators who actually believe and have written down that they actually think that this very well may not have been a parable. Not a parable, if you don't understand what a parable is basically a story that illustrates a point. So it can be fiction, and most often cases a parable would have been fiction. But some of these commentators are actually believing, they're looking at this story, and they're saying, this might have actually happened. And there's several different phrases that lead them to believe that. For instance, in some of the parables that you read where Jesus shares a parable, he says, a certain person or a certain man or a certain woman. Well, this doesn't start out like that. It actually refers to a man went down, and we're going to see that here in just a moment. But I say that because I want you to think now. Imagine with me that this is not a made-up story. You know, just work with me here and just mentally get in this capacity. Let's say that this is a true story. I'm not saying that it is, but it's possible. It is possible that this is a true story. So just engage with me then. Imagine, if you will, that this expert in the law is hearing this story and knows that this story is true. Because perhaps with Jesus and his all-knowing nature, with what he did with Nathanael and Philip, perhaps that this story is actually about this expert. That's possible. You know, I'm not saying that dogmatically, but it is possible that this is the case. So now that you have that kind of in your mind, and even if it wasn't the case, the truth application is still there. So listen, this is Jesus, he's going to share this story. It's a wonderful story. Jesus says, a man going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, when he fell into the hands of robbers. There was a 17-mile stretch between Jerusalem and Jericho. We'll see it on a map here in a little bit. And that was a very treacherous road. There's lots of caves and kind of clefts and rocks, things that robbers were known to be able to hide behind, and it was known as a dangerous route. Okay? So the man's going from Jerusalem to Jericho. When he fell into the hands of robbers, they stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and he saw him. He bandaged his wounds. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expenses that you may have. Okay, some interesting points, and this is so key, and this is why we're actually covering this today as opposed to going on with John chapter 4. So we're seeing several characters here. We see like a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan. It sounds like a terrible joke, doesn't it? Okay, a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan, they walk into a bar, and the deacon ducks, you know? So you have kind of the setup here. So Jesus has these people, and he kind of lays them out. And so this priest walks by this guy, and he just walks by on the other side. So the idea is with this dangerous road, this man is laying half dead. Here comes this priest, and he sees the man, and he passes by on the other side. He actually moves away from this man and continues on his way. And you have the Levite that kind of comes and does the exact same thing. And then you have a Samaritan that comes. And so big deal. But here's some history on this, and this is so important to grasp, okay? Many years before this time, there was one nation of Israel. Remember, you've heard of the man King Solomon. Okay, King Solomon was a son of King David. Maybe these are some names that ring a bell. But what's interesting, so the nation of Israel, remember Abraham was promised the promised land, you know, that Moses takes him in. This is where they create the nation of Israel. And they have their judges, they have their prophets, and this is their nation. Well, so after King David and then after King Solomon, Solomon had a son whose name was Rehoboam. Rehoboam was made king by Solomon before Solomon died, just before he died. Rehoboam had heavy, heavy burden and taxation on the people. So much so, in fact, that there was a lot of people that were upset with Rehoboam as their king. And there was another man by the name of Jeroboam who was extremely charismatic, well-liked. And so 10 of the tribes of Israel chose to follow Jeroboam, leaving just Judah and Benjamin. And this divided the kingdom. It was, in a sense, a kind of a civil war without the war at this point, where there became a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. And this is kind of what it looked like. And so what happened was Jeroboam ended up becoming ruler of this area, the 10 tribes, and Rehoboam was still ruler of the southern tribes. Now there's going to be a number of kings that go in through here, and I'm not going to list them all. But through this process, then, here's what happened. Jeroboam was afraid of letting anyone go to Jerusalem to worship God at the temple, okay? Because they had to go to Jerusalem. That was kind of the deal. That was the rule. But Jeroboam, this charismatic guy, was afraid to let anyone go down there. And so he said, no, we'll build our own temple. And on this temple, then they ended up worshiping different idols, you know, including idols to Baal and some of these other false gods. And so Jeroboam led this 10-tribe nation of kingdom of Israel into idolatry. And because of that, there had to be some consequences. And so what you have is this Assyrian empire, God allowed to come in and take control of the kingdom of Israel. And what ended up happening, long story short, they would come in and they would conquer, and there was still some existence of the Israelite kings at that time, but they were really under Assyrian control. And so what would happen is all these Assyrians would come in and infiltrate it, and there ended up being a lot of interracial marriage, which at the time and for this culture and specifically with God's plan, this was not acceptable. This was for God's nation to be a nation that stood out and separated and showed basically the world who God was. And so this was a huge deal. And we had so much, in fact, so King Ahab became a king at one point of the northern kingdom, and he married Jezebel, who was a Phoenician, okay? And so you have all of this intermarrying going on in this kingdom of Israel, which at the time was just no way, not allowed, not going to happen. And then what you have is down here in these southern kingdoms, you have a number of kings come through, some good, many of them bad. They also turn to idol worship. Hang with me here. This is really important. And then the Babylonians would have been over here, come in, and they actually conquer the southern kingdom. Then they conquer Judea. They take many of the smartest and brightest ones from Judea back to Babylon and leave the poor and the discarded, if you would, in Judea. So they would have taken, you remember stories of like from Daniel and the lion's den, if you remember that story, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they would have been taken at this time from the kingdom of Judea over to Babylon. Years pass, you have the, it's not Phoenicians. Thank you. Persians come in and they conquer Babylon. Okay, and once that happens, King Darius then allows some of these Israelites to go back into Judea here and kind of reestablish themselves. They even helped build up a new temple because the Babylonians had destroyed the previous temple. And so all of this is happening. So this is where it gets to be important to us. So if those Judeans come back, if they have stayed, I know they had idol worship, but they had stayed true to basically what God had commanded them to the Israelites. All right, they had stayed pure, even if you will. And they come in and they come back to Jerusalem and they're rebuilding the temple, and they see that up in this area here, many of them have not. And for those who had not, this is Samaria right here. This is what Ahab and Jezebel had established as this city and this temple in Samaria. And this is where these mixed breeds kind of resided, all right? This has kind of got to be their group. Long story short, Alexander the Great comes in. He kind of destroys them all. Romans take over. And what you're left with then is this picture here. New Testament time. This is what we're looking at. Here's Judea. This is Jericho. This is Jerusalem. This is that road that we're talking about that is the dangerous road. This is Samaria. And what we find Jesus talking about in this picture is this man's going from Jerusalem down to Jericho. He's attacked by robbers. Now what you have, he's a Jewish man attacked by robbers. Now what you have is these Samaritans who were hated by the Jews. They were half-breeds. You know, you did not stay true. So much so, in fact, that they wouldn't let them come into the Jewish temple to worship. And so much so that they ended up building their own temple there. And the Jews actually went up and destroyed their temple on a different mountain. And we'll see that next week. They destroyed their temple on a different mountain because there's just huge animosity and racism going on between the Samaritans who did not obey and do what God wanted and the Judeans who saw themselves as uplifted or better. I can't emphasize how strong of animosity this was. So much so, what had happened here is people, if they wanted to go up to the region of Galilee, what they would do is they would be willing to cross the river, the Jordan River, twice so that they didn't even have to walk through Samaria. So they would cross the Jordan River, they'd go up on this side, and then come back over into Nazareth and the region of Galilee there. I mean, there was strong hatred and animosity here between the people. And this is the road then. So what you have is you have this Jewish man who is attacked on this road. And then you have the priest who comes by. And the priest, he's God's leader, really. You know, he's there to care for the people. And he sees this injured man, and he walks by on the other side, and then you have this Levite. If you remember from a few weeks back, when Jesus was clearing the temple, it was the Levites had a role in the temple worship. They were supposed to help the people to worship God, and they were selling these sacrifices. Remember that? Well, this Levite, who is supposed to help point people to God and help point people to worship, also moves to the other side of the road. And then he lays out, but then there was this enemy. There was this man that came by that you guys absolutely hate. And he came by and he saw him. And not only did he help him, I mean, listen to the ways that he helped him. He provided him, took care of it, bandages his wounds. So he gives him basically medicine, this oil and whatnot. He provides for him, cares for his wounds, takes him with him to a hotel, if you will, pays for the lodging for a month or two, and says to the guy, if that's not enough, I'll come back and I'll cover the rest. And it just goes above and beyond. And this is a picture that would have hit this expert in the law. And imagine if it were true. Imagine, hypothetically, if he were the one, if he were that priest, knowing full well, I passed on the other side of the road. And he's asking the question, who is my neighbor? And this is the story that Jesus gives him, knowing full well of his own errors and his own mistakes. So we look at this story, and it's easy to look at it from a distance and just say, well, yeah, it's a good story. That means basically we should help people. But there's two sides of this that we really need to look at this morning. You know, number one is who do you hate? You know, and I know it's a strong word, but we look at it here, what we have with Judea and Samaria. These people hated each other. I mean, so strongly, and yet Jesus gives this example. And if this story is true, it's not just a story of a picture of the way he wants it to be, because he's going to tell us to go and do likewise in just a moment. But who do you hate? You know, that's a tough question, because we'd like to be able to say, I don't hate anybody. Who do you struggle to get along with? Who do you, let's put it this way. Who is it that you would cross the river twice just to not in common contact with? You know what I'm saying? That's right. You know someone's there, it's like, well, okay, I'm taking the long road this time. I'm taking that detour all the way around so that I don't have to cross paths with that person. I think we all have them. Or at least, minimally, we all have had them. But there's some people, sometimes it's family members. Sometimes it's friends even. In many cases, it's just people that rub us the wrong way. Now envision, if you would, that person that you have identified. Now envision what it would look like. Okay, you're faced with this decision. You know what to do, and you know that you're supposed to do it. You know that that decision is right, and you walk by on the other side of the road, and you choose not to do it. And then you have your enemy steps in and does what is right. And where does that leave you? Trying, you know, we scramble to try to justify, you know, I'll put it in similar capacities, and it applies to so many aspects of our lives, all right? It's not just when we see someone stranded on the side of the road. You know, we see someone hurting, we pass by on the other side of the road just because, I don't want to get elbow deep in that. I don't know what's going on there. I don't want to deal with that. And then you watch the person that you just really have trouble connecting with and getting along with, and they encounter that person, and they meet them where they're at. It's like, wow, that's a little bit humbling. Maybe that's, I knew I should have done it and I chose not to do it, and that's where I'm left. You know, and Jesus takes and he wraps up this story. The story that he has shared that becomes the story of the expert in the law, but it should also then become our story. You know, we should own this story. But this is how he wraps it up. Look at this. He just says to this expert, all right, tell me, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man that fell in hands of robbers? Remember when he said, who is my neighbor? He wanted to totally justify himself because we see in that Leviticus passage where it says, among your people. You know, so in other words, I just want to stay among my people. As long as it's Jew, then I'm fine. You know, as long as it's people that I like and care about, then I'm fine. But as soon as you start throwing in my enemy on that, I'm not okay with that. And so he's trying to justify himself in that. And this is what Jesus says. He lets him answer. So I gave you these three examples. You tell me, who was the man's neighbor? And I just love the response. Because notice what he will not even say, the word. He says, the expert replied, the one who had mercy on him. You know, Jesus laid it out. He says, the priest, you have three choices, the priest, the Levite, or the Samaritan. Well, which one had, you know, which one was the man's neighbor? He doesn't say Samaritan. That hatred is still existing there. You see that? He said, I'll tell you, it's the one who had mercy on him. And I had no mercy. And he's found himself face to face with this picture of what Jesus is calling him to do. And Jesus said, go and do likewise. There's another side of the coin here. Because we look at it from the expert of the law, because he's been given this example, who is the man's neighbor? He's able to identify it's the man's neighbor, was a Samaritan. He says the one who had mercy on him. Jesus says, go and do likewise. And so we see it from that vantage point. But there's another piece here, because the Samaritans also didn't have positive relationship with the Jews. It was a hatred on both sides. And so even in this story, whether this story was actual factual literal happenings or whether the story was in fact a parable, the truth still lies there. You have a Samaritan who's faced with this dilemma, going by a Jew on the side of the road, and he's got a decision to make. Am I going to help this man who has need, even though he is my enemy? You know, we look at it both ways. My enemy helped this man he shouldn't have. I am the enemy. I'm going to help this person. It's there on both sides. Whether you're kind of looking at yourself and seeing yourself as a Jew, saying, well, I've got it all together, you know. If you don't look at the scriptures, right, and see in these scriptures and find, I can't read the scriptures and feel good about myself. I don't know if that makes sense. Okay, you know, let me articulate that a little bit more clear. Because when I look at the scriptures, what I see is a story like this, you know, where what Jesus lays out is this picture of this expert in the law. And if I look at this, oh man, I made me feel so good because I am the guy that would have stopped and helped. It points out to me all of the areas that's like, wow, that is not who God wants me to be. Does that make sense? You know, so it's not, I mean, I find great encouragement in it because I see grace throughout the scriptures. And I'll tell you, if I read these scriptures and I don't see grace, oh, where am I left? I can't look, maybe this is the better way to put it. I'll phrase it this way. I can't look at the scriptures and find a way to find myself righteous. That's a better way to put it. Okay? Because when I look at the scriptures, I'm left with nothing but a picture of my unrighteousness. And that's where we look at it and you find that grace that he's offering. It's like, I'm so glad there's a grace because I recognize my unrighteousness. This expert in the law came face to face with his unrighteousness. You know, and Jesus, he doesn't condemn him. That's the beauty of it. That's what I love about what Jesus offers. He doesn't condemn him and says, well, sorry, you're out of luck. What must I do to inherit eternal life? He gives the right answers, and then Jesus gives out this story and says, go and do likewise. And then this man, you know, sorry, you know, you didn't do it. You know, I gave you a chance, you didn't do it. You know, you're gone. He says, go and do likewise. That's grace that keeps coming up. So I don't know, I got to ask you, where does this story leave you? You know, where does this story encounter you? Where will you allow this story to take you this morning? Because this story is our story. Will you take that next step to invite Jesus to do that changing work that will empower you to go and to do likewise? Because you can't do that on your own. You can't find righteousness on your own. That comes from only the work that Jesus can do by simply saying, okay, I see your point. The expert can kind of say, all right, I see your point. I will go and do likewise. And that's where the hope is found.